at the 40 show. Check the 40 shorty, yeah. Check the 40 shorty, yeah. Check the 40 shorty. Why you acting all guidy? This ain't a pot, this a party.
We are back. Welcome to another episode of the Fantasy 40 Podcast. We will be skipping hits or misses this week and jumping right into week 8. I know I jotted down what we did well and bad on last week, but overall, kind of what I predicted, wasn't the world's greatest fantasy week. So hopefully this week will be better. And just looking at some of the projected totals here, it should be on paper better than last week.
You just went silent after that last week.
That was it.
Yeah, that was it. I was like, did you freeze? Did you pass it to me? What just happened?
That was the thought process.
Okay. Yes. I did not listen to last week's either. Life continues to happen. So what was a good thought process of reviewing our hits and misses and pumping out an additional episode? Well, life said no thank you to that, because earmarking an hour just to listen to a podcast that you recorded and then scheduling a podcast, editing a podcast, releasing a podcast, and then doing the current week's podcast. Not really likely at this point in time for us. So maybe I'll put some things out on Twitter and recap hits and misses on our Fantasy 40 Twitter account. But what's more important is the present and how we feel about the games this week. So we are recording on Tuesday at lunchtime, so this should be out by Thursday morning. So we're going to tackle this Thursday night football game, which I know you despise Thursday night football games with a white hot passion, but there is some fantasy value to be had for certain in this one, with the 1-6 Atlanta Falcons heading down to Bank of America Stadium to do battle with the 3-4 Carolina Panthers, and what seems like the return of the Mac, Christian McCaffrey, taking off the injured reserve or whatever list currently resides in the NFL with all these variations of things. He is donning a red jersey in practice today.
See, if he's in the red jersey, then they're slightly concerned about him. Why not give him the week off now and give him another 10 days to recover then? It's illogical to me. I disagree. You know my feelings on these Thursday games. They tend to be stinkers. No reason why this won't be much of the same. Got a high total, 49. Carolina's a small home favorite at 3. Implied totals, we're looking at the Panthers with 25 and the Falcons. Well, it's 3, so the Falcons should be 23. So a little off with the implied totals. But you know, I fade these Thursday games where I can. You're going to play this is a typical game where you're going to play the guys you know. There's no secret players emerging here, no injuries of note. Like you said, McCaffrey's the opposite, coming back from an injury. But I fade these games. The big names here are in play as always. Gurley, obviously, could be in line for a big game. He's been scoring a ton of touchdowns, even if they are by mistake. And Carolina gives up a ton on the ground, so Gurley's probably in play this week for in line for a huge game. But other than that, nobody here jumps off the page as a sleeper or somebody overlooked. We thought Ian Thomas would have a good game last week, and unfortunately we didn't get the huge Ian Thomas game we had hoped, but not going to happen this week either.
No, it's not going to happen this season. I mean, Ian Thomas is going the way of Chris Herndon. Unfortunately, these high upside athletic tight ends that seem to have no competition in their own offense and get no attention. They get no pass game volume. So we can forget that ever happened. But did you see the Todd Gurley play from last week?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, amazing. Because one, I unfortunately own Todd Gurley in my main home league and am forced to start him due to injury. So I was very happy he fell into the end zone by mistake. But it'd be interesting to see how many weeks were shifted by that, because Gurley shouldn't have scored. And then Hockenson shouldn't have scored. Stafford shouldn't have got the yards that he got, because they were just trying to run the clock and get the field goal. So there was a lot of variables that were in place there. So thank you, Todd Gurley, for scoring. It benefited me and didn't hurt me anywhere. So I'm a fan. But to your point, Carolina rush defense is allowing 4.9 yards per carry and have given up 10 rushing touchdowns already on this season. So it's another fire up Gurley week. He's just as likely to score a rushing touchdown as just about any running back in the NFL, it seems, right now. He's getting all that work. even as ugly as it looks, and he did not have a pretty stat line last week, but those two touchdowns will cure many an ill. On the other side, the Atlanta pass defense is allowing a robust 344 yards per game and have given up 19 passing touchdowns already on the year. So you would think this is continue the DJ Moore touchdown streak. Robbie Anderson is a must start here. I like that they're trying to get a little creative with Curtis Samuel, but if Christian McCaffrey is back, I mean, it could be all bets are off. I mean, he is going to command, if not as many more targets than Mike Davis. I'm slightly interested to see what type of role Mike Davis has in this offense with McCaffrey back in the fold. Because he can't completely shelf him. I mean, it can't be 100% work to McCaffrey out of his backfield. Right? It just can't.
I would say it would be, except for your news about him still in the red jersey. So obviously they're not comfortable with him taking the hits and getting a monster workload. So where I would normally disagree entirely, I think you may be right for this week.
I just think, you know, you got to preserve that asset. So why not 75% workload? I mean, that's still bell cow work for McCaffrey, and let Mike Davis get the measly 25% of work. Still have McCaffrey in on all the money downs and stuff like that. I just don't see the 100% snap counts where he's just piling up receptions after receptions, getting 20 carry games after this. I don't need to, at least for the remainder of this year. Now, as far as the quarterbacks in this game go, who would you, if you had to pick between the two of these guys, who do you think has the better fantasy day between them? Because I think in my head, it goes right to Matt Ryan initially, just because like comeback mode. No. But given how bad the Atlanta pass defense is, I think it's a little closer than just a slam dunk, right?
To me, it's Matty Ice, Carolina, especially if McCaffrey's back. I mean, he might get some dink and dunks to the backfield, but it's Matty Ice. He's got the track record.
He does, and you know, it seems like it should be a closer game with this 3-point nominal line here. So it's not going to be chasing as many points. Maybe you don't get the aerial assault that one would normally think. But in the unfortunate loss that they just had last week, when they were largely in control of the game, winning throughout, what Matt Ryan put up, still 338-1 in the game. Still threw it 42 times. I mean, that's still a hefty workload in the passing game. And that was with 26 carries overall. So I'm with you, but I think Teddy has sneaky upside, like a 280 and two touchdown day here. In what I think will be an eventful Thursday night football game. Anything else in this one?
No, we've spent far too long on a Thursday game.
John hates Thursday football. All right. So we are on to the weekend. We're going to start Sunday with a bang, and it's the lifeless 2-4 New England Patriots heading to Bills Stadium. They really need to get a sponsor. Didn't they used to be New Era Stadium? Why is this Bills Stadium right now?
It's like, changed.
Lack of respect. Yeah, no one wants to invest in upstate New York. To the 5-2 Buffalo Bills. What do we got going on here?
Buffalo is... I lost it on the sheet. Where is it?
I have it at -3.5 and 43.
You're correct. You got it. Yeah, so not 43 is a very underwhelming total. Quick glance here. I believe it is tied for the lowest on the week, and that is correct. So they're not anticipating a lot of fantasy points here. I'm actually surprised it's only 3. New England looked terrible. The worst we've probably seen in, 20-ish years. Buffalo looked good to start the year and kind of been a little lackluster the last few weeks, but they're still at home against a really disappointing New England team. That might just be name value, giving them the 3 at home. I think Buffalo wins this one pretty easily. I think it's a yucky game. I like the total under 43, but I think Buffalo wins this one. I don't feel comfortable playing anyone in fantasy here. Everyone's disappointed a bit. Obviously, if you have Josh Allen, you're not benching him. The running backs, no thanks. Diggs is going to probably draw the tough matchup with Gilmore. So kind of spin the wheel here. PPR, Beasley could volume his way into a nice game. And for New England, this is just a spread the ball around dumpster fire. If Cam doesn't run in 3 times, he's not even playable. So no thanks with that total.
Yeah, and I see that at least what I'm looking at, there's 9 sub 50 game totals this week. So to your point, this might be another letdown week from a fantasy perspective. But listen, we thought that the Buffalo Bills had a rollover affair last week against the Jets, and they actually had to come from behind with that game in the second half with no offensive touchdowns. It was a field goal fest. So I just don't know what to make of this Buffalo team. Stephon Diggs is definitely getting Stephon Gilmore, and temper expectations. You can't sit Diggs, but definitely do not expect, you know, the landslide games that we have seen from him. I like Beasley as a sneaky call. New England pass defense is allowing 240 yards per game, so keeping teams in check, and only 9 passing touchdowns so far through 6 games. So they're containing the pass, and then conversely, what at least perceived or I perceived to previously be a stout run defense, the Buffalo run defense is allowing 4.6 yards per carry and 9 rushing touchdowns on the year. So that kind of plays into, I'm sure, the Patriots' game plan of running the ball and shrinking the game against the Bills. Are we sure that Cam's getting the start this week? Was that literally just like yank him because it was the ugliest affair ever? Or is Cam starting to – Cam's – since coming back from COVID, Cam has had some 2 questionable starts. And I don't think Bill Belichick wants to be embarrassed again after what the 49ers did to him. So I think he's going to have a short leash.
But he's better than Stidham.
I don't disagree, but I'm not starting Cam unless I absolutely have to anywhere. I just do not feel comfortable in his safety and security in the game and just against Buffalo, the upside. How do you feel about Devin Singletary versus Zach Moss in this game?
Yuck. Yeah, yuck. I don't like either one. They're not, nobody's voluming their way into production. Not interested.
No, they almost even split 8 carries for Singletary, 7 for Moss against the Jets, but Zach Moss was far more productive with him, averaging 6.7 yards per carry, largely on the strength of a 26-yard run. But that only 3.6 for Singletary. Moss was actually more involved in the passing game as well. He had less targets, but more catches, 3 for 25 to Singletary's 2 for 18. I'm starting to call for the Zach Moss shift. They drafted him to be their primary running back, to handle the goal line stuff. I think he's probably a better pass catcher than Devin Singletary. So I don't know where Devin Singletary is better than Zach Moss, in my opinion, but it's still not going to be neither one of these guys is going to see 15 carries. So the upside is limited. But if I had to flex one of them this week, it's going to be Zach Moss over Devin Singletary. Can you start Julian Edelman in this game?
I mean, if you're banged up, you may have to. I have a league where he's absolutely going to start for me.
Yeah, 1 catch for 13 yards on 3 targets.
He needs to go to Tampa.
He needs to breathe some life back in him. But outside of that, who was it, the Kansas City game earlier in the year? Who was playing where he just was like balling out early in the year where he had a ton of targets, right? That was the Seahawks game, week 3. That's who it was. I knew it was a high-scoring game. He has just disappeared since then. There is nothing on this Patriots offense that I feel the slightest bit comfortable with as far as just even floors are concerned. I mean, it's going to be Damian Harris getting the running downs work, but that's if they can run. James White and Rex Burkhead are going to siphon off anything passing downs related. It's just atrocious. Like, this is just a dredge of a game. I mean, you're going to fire up Kyle Allen, but he hasn't been Kyle Allen the last couple of weeks. His last 2 starts, I don't even know if he's turned in QB1s on either of them. I mean, he didn't have a touchdown against the Jets, which is just embarrassing unto its own right. Everyone scores on the Jets. And the week before, he didn't do too well against KC in that kind of weather-affected game. He was, 122 passing, 2-1, with only 42 rushing. That's not a QB1 performance there either. So the shine is off young Josh Allen a little bit. I got to think those MVP odds have cratered at this point when the people a month in were saying this guy was a front runner for the MVP. He's a He's showing his chinks in his armor a little bit. But again, too much time on that game. Not a lot of fantasy value. I think better of this one. And it is the 1-5 Minnesota Vikings head to Lambeau Field to do battle with the 5-1 Green Bay Packers. We're going to have to talk about Aaron Jones and Dalvin Cook, but tell me, give me the stats first.
Opened at 56. It's down to 54, which is tied for the highest, 54.5. Minnesota is looking at 24 points. Green Bay is looking at a second highest, 30.5. We got three teams over 30 this week, or if we had none last week. So should be all Green Bay. I mean, Minnesota's falling off the face of the earth. I think defensively, Green Bay should be able to stop whatever disaster Kirk Cousins wants to throw out there this week. Hopefully we get a little Aaron Jones back in our life, force feeding the ball to Davante Adams. This team, Green Bay, has a very narrow distribution tree when they're fully healthy. So obviously Adams is in play. Aaron Jones is in play if he's back from the calf thing. Tanyan, who I believe we've been mispronouncing as Tunyon, which for our show, we're just going to keep doing it wrong on purpose. And I like Aaron Rodgers. Minnesota's secondary is trash, in my opinion. For Minnesota, Mattson really has let us down in his little run here with Cook on the shelf. Wide receiver-wise, Thielen's had a great year. No reason he's going to stop that this week also. And Irv Smith's been emerging a little bit. I don't know if this is the game he breaks out, but definitely worth keeping on your radar. See how they use him.
Very well said. And the Vikings have went and shipped off Yannick Ngakoue too to bolster the Ravens defense. Yeah, they're mailing it in. They knew they weren't re-signing him. I think he was a one-year rental to try and make a push. Danielle Hunter went on, I think, long-term IR. He's coming back this year. Mm-hmm. They're done. So you're going to get some Thielen and Justin Jefferson love the remainder of this year. I couldn't find anything on Dalvin Cook, but it's only Tuesday, so I'd had to find a Monday practice report for him. But Madison let us down, and I don't know that I'd feel comfortable going back to the well with him, even if Dalvin Cook doesn't play, because there was far too much Amir Abdullah and Mike Boone involved the week prior, in my opinion. Now, on the Green Bay side, the Aaron Jones injury was described as a very mild calf strain. I think they knew they could go to the Texans and beat the shit out of them without Aaron Jones for a week. They could probably do the same to the Minnesota Vikings, all things being considered, returning home a week later. So how cautious are they going to be with our boy Showtime? But it's not like Jamal Williams didn't step in and do an admirable job doing his best Aaron Jones impersonation. It's just that he's just not Aaron Jones, and he just doesn't – we don't like him as much. He doesn't provide the upside. But, 19 for 77, rushing touchdown. Didn't do much in the passing game. Didn't do 4 for 37, second on the team. But it was a Davante Adams world last week, 196-2. That could happen again, folks. There's nothing in that Vikings defense that's going to stop Davante Adams from posting another massive.
It's more likely than it is unlikely.
It's entirely likely. So keep an eye out on Aaron Jones. If not, you can easily fire up Jamal Williams again, because what it's not is going to be A.J. Dillon. They had this game pretty squarely in hand, and they still only gave 5 carries to A.J. Dillon. So he is a distant third. He is in blowout loss mode. He got more work when they got toasted by the Bucs the week prior than he did just icing a game away. So that's not going to happen this year for anyone that thinks A.J. Dillon's going to be a thing, barring some massive injuries. But want Aaron Jones to come back sooner rather than later. Speaking of that Minnesota pass defense, they are allowing 12.4 yards per reception. That is tied for 30th in the NFL. So when people catch balls on the Vikings, they're big gains. That's abysmal. So, fire up your Davante Adams. You can't touch anyone else in this offense. It's just – there's just not going to be enough to go around. I'm not starting MVS. Tunyon, who I actually like it as Tunyon. It sounds like how we would have pronounced it wrong initially, and he would tell us it was Tunyon. So I'm going to go with it. But, we did get a Jay Sternberger touchdown last week, and I know you didn't want to say anything about that because, now Aaron Rodgers throws the tight ends. It's a it's a fucking miracle. And so, you know, I guess Tonyan can be a thing as far as it's concerned, but I wouldn't be uber comfortable with him. I think he's a little dinged up. So not much more than that. It could be a firefight. So this could be a Kirk Cousins sneaky high, 303 game, but it'll probably put two interceptions on top of that. So good luck to your Scott Fishbowl team, John, but Aaron Rodgers should easily put a 303 game up himself if he needs to, in what should be an easy walk-away win for those Green Bay Packers. Next up is...
Somehow Scott Fishbowl team has magically won five straight. I'm 5-2 and tied for first in my division, which is shocking because that team stinks.
You want to know why?
Like, of what, Ingram?
Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, buddy.
That's been on my bench most weeks.
Carson Wentz just pulling the team onto his back like he is the Philadelphia Eagles and carrying your listless ass to glory. So
I just need him to be good in weeks 13 through 16.
Well, listen, we'll talk about him later today and how good he's going to be. But for then, we got to talk about this game probably very briefly. And it is the 0-7 Adam Gase's heading to Arrowhead Stadium to be absolutely slaughtered by the 6-1 Kansas City Chiefs. We forecasted what this line was going to be. You went bold and said it could be north of 20. I am so interested to hear where this line actually opened at. I think I went 17 for me. So where are we?
Do you know what it is?
I do not. I didn't look.
It opened at 21, like I thought. It went down to 19. It's at 19 and a half now.
Oh, goodness gracious. Look at you.
And it's not enough.
That Vegas is rubbing off on you.
The Jets are going to get fucking murdered. Chiefs are projected at 33. Let's scroll all the way to the bottom here. The Jets are at 14. It's literally the highest and the lowest projected total on the board. That's all you need to know. Fire up everybody in a Kansas City uniform, fade everybody in the Jets. I mean, could be in for some garbage time, you know, quarterback production here, but I'm not interested at all. I mean, like I said, the garbage time will be there if Crowder's back from injury. I don't know what his status is right now. He could be in play, but yeah.
I literally drafted Sam Darnold at the end of Scott Fishbowl for this week. So fingers crossed, because I have Deshaun Watson on a bye. So I have both quarterbacks in this game in my Scott Fishbowl team. My team is not 5-2, by the way. I think I'm 3-4 and just litany of injuries and didn't hit on any of these young running backs yet. But to your point, I think Denzel Mims made his rookie debut last week, turned 7 targets and a 4-catch, 42. He could be a sneaky DFS type guy because they will have to throw it whether they like to or not. And Breshad Perriman got knocked out of the game, and I doubt he plays. Jamison Crowder also missed, so we did get a little Braxton Berrios. Those two kind of have some sneaky appeal in the lowest of low leagues. LaMichael Perine, so the lesser of the Perines, or like, I guess in bulk, but the better in football talent, actually scored last week, but it was Frank Gore who put 5.5 yards per carry on his 11 touches. Like, who even knows anymore? But yeah, why are we talking about the Jets? On the Kansas City side, start every single one of them, and you could probably even go down to the Mecole Hardmans and Denard Robinsons of the world. I mean, it's
the red flag here, though, for like DFS or even for fantasy. They could be up 30 halfway through the third, and we saw last week they'll put Henny in and get the backup some work. So it should be a good game for them early, but I think they beat the dog shit out of them so bad that it ends up really capping. I'd have put this is going to throw five because once they're you know, after they get in the end zone four times, they're going to start benching those guys.
Yeah, it was a rough week as a Mahomes owner, a few spots where you see that Kansas City puts up 43 points and Mahomes throws for 201 touchdown because they're getting defensive touchdowns and they're not really trying to step on the throat of the Broncos at the time. So it's entirely likely that's the game.
It's going to be more.
Yep. Now, the one question before we get out of this game is, what is Le'Veon Bell's stat line
in this game? Forgot that revenge game. No, he's that. There you go. That's the guy to play. He's going to get all that fucking late work when they're already up 30. So he's going to put up some monster. Give me all his. I don't know where. I don't do a lot of the player prop bets. Give me every Le'Veon Bell second half stat line. 70 yards in the second half, a touchdown, maybe two. Yeah, give me that guy in the second half going crazy.
Yeah, only six touches, all in the running game. Didn't have a target, but looked refreshed being in Kansas City. I mean, you know how could you not? But 6.5 yards per carry, like.
I buried the lead in this too. That was one of the things. All the teams he looked at played the Jets in like the next 3 weeks. So he has their whole playbook. Kansas City's going to beat them by fucking 30. This 21 is too low.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean,
he's giving them every play that they have this whole week.
That's even more insulting that the Jets were beating the Bills at halftime last week. That we're talking about 21 points not being enough for these same Jets going against Kansas City a week later. Although it is in Kansas City, but that matters here nor there. I agree. Le'Veon Bell 100,000% gets a touchdown in this game. I don't know when it's going to come, but sure as shit, it's going to come. And I just want to know what happens immediately after, because I mentioned on a previous episode, can he please just walk the ball over to Adam Gase and hand it to him? Just give him the utter disrespect. Don't say anything. Yeah, don't just rub. Just hand him the football and just run off to the sideline. That would just be epic. Yeah, I think 80 and a touchdown for Bell is probably a floor for him in this blowout, because he will be seeing some of that mid second quarter, early third quarter work. He'll probably even be on the bench by the fourth quarter when they give it to DeAndre Washington and Darrell Williams at that point in time. But they are going to make it a point.
Darwin Thompson, get
Bell his. Well, he's now fifth because they elevated DeAndre Washington again. So Darwin Thompson ceases to exist all over again, thanks to Le'Veon Bell. But yes, I think you say you coined the term. I have the Chiefs by murder.
Yeah.
And that's about right. Okay, to a far more compelling game and very meaningful game for their division. The 6-0, only undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. Are they the only? Yeah, they're the only undefeated, right? Because Tennessee lost as well. Yeah, they lost to Pittsburgh and Seattle lost. So the lone remaining undefeated team, 6-0, Pittsburgh Steelers, head to Baltimore, M&T Bank Stadium, to do battle against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens.
I'm a little shocked here. Game open Baltimore 6.5 at home is now 3.5 with a total of 46. They're expecting Baltimore to put up 24 and the Steelers to put up 21. I don't know how you're going against the Steelers at this point. I mean, I get these games are, and that's the other thing, 46. These games, especially in that AFC North, tend to be kind of black and blue, low scoring affairs. Obviously, the upside is there with the skill players in this game. But I kind of lean towards the under here and think Pittsburgh wins, a bit of a muddled contest. I think both of them run pretty heavy in this game. I'm going to fade most of the receivers here. I think Mark Andrews is in play. Pittsburgh's been a little soft against the tight end. And Andrews is in play anyway. It's not like that's breaking news. Pittsburgh. This is Deontay Johnson's wide receiver core. No matter what's happening, that guy gets back on the field, he's getting peppered with targets. This is his – he's the wide receiver to own here. Everyone can take their Claypool shares and stash him back on the bench till Johnson gets hurt again. Juju's a ghost. So this game, despite the total – I'm kind of fading for fantasy. I'll take the running backs. I think they're going to get some work. Baltimore – unfortunately, because of kind of a full-blown committee, even though Ingram's touches have been ticking down. Ingram, Edwards, Dobbins all get a fair amount of work here. None of the wide receivers have really popped yet for Baltimore, and I don't think this is the game where somebody has their breakout to be the best defense in football. So I'm not a fan of this one for fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, in the game last week where you mentioned Deontay Johnson coming back, 15 targets. Juju had 14 in that same game. They had identical stat lines, both 9 catches. Deontay Johnson, 80 yards. Juju, 85 yards. But, yes, the 2 money touchdowns went to your boy Deontay Johnson. Chase Claypool, Sterling, 1 catch for -2 yards. They did have Malcolm Butler on him. They put their primary cornerback on Chase Claypool, and they just got eaten alive inside by Deontay Johnson and Juju. So I'm with you. There's a more stout pass defense coming their way in these Baltimore Ravens. They are pretty solid across the board, going even three deep with corners. So I wouldn't feel too happy starting any of these guys. But let's talk about the team defense themselves. Pittsburgh is allowing 3.4 yards per carry on the season. They have just shut down running games, and that's clearly what the Ravens want and intend to do against every team they play. So it's going to be interesting to see how they pull that off. Pittsburgh, conversely, their pass defense is 31st in the league in yards per reception at 12.5. So when we were talking about the stats earlier of the Vikings at 12.4, so Pittsburgh gives up more per catch. You know, you can get them over the top. Could be the Marquise Hollywood Brown big breakout game, 100 and a touchdown. He hasn't hit that mark yet this year. They're going to need to throw the ball deep on Pittsburgh. They're not just going to be able to live running the ball to short dink and dunk shit. So I'm optimistic about Hollywood Brown the game. And you said Mark Andrews is a must start. Well, he was supposed to be a must start against the Eagles too. Remember what happened there?
Boy, was he
egg on against a very gettable Eagles pass defense to the tight end. So little sketchy there. Nick Boyle still on touchdowns. Mark Andrews still just not seeing the volume you want to see from an alpha tight end. You are going to start him, but I am lowering expectations on Mark Andrews from this week. On the season, both of these run defenses have only allowed 4 rushing touchdowns on the year. So they've both been very stingy to running backs. So temper your James Conner expectations as well, because he has been living on volume and getting into the end zone, and I don't think Baltimore is going to allow that. Which quarterback do you feel more confident starting in this game?
Jackson, just because you get the additional points with his legs.
Hopefully after the bye week, you know, he was a little nicked up on injury reports previous weeks, but he didn't look that beat up against my Eagles where he was running all over them. So yeah, you want to get that as well. But and Pittsburgh did lose Devin Bush, who's one of their best, you know, run and chase down linebackers. So not going to be as concerned about Lamar Jackson, but he needs to come out and have a big game here. They're going to need to be fighting for points and yards. So he shouldn't be able to take his foot off the throttle. And I want to see a big time Lamar Jackson game here where, you know, can you put 300 yards passing on the ledger? Like, you don't need 100 yards rushing, but give me 50 yards rushing and go for multiple touchdowns at the end of the day, because that's what it's going to take to beat the Steelers. I do think the Ravens beat the Steelers here at home. This is literally a must-win game for these Ravens. You know, if they don't want to see Pittsburgh keep getting away from them, and they have home field advantage coming off of the bye. Everything is in their favor, and they're a dog at home. I mean, play the disrespect card. You said it opened it.
Pittsburgh's the favorite. I mean, I'm sorry, Baltimore's the favorite. They're 3.5 at home.
Oh, I thought you said they were getting. I was like, shit. It's like that is utterly disrespectful. So, okay, well, it opened high and it's been bid down almost a, you know, a pick. I'm giving a 3 to Baltimore, but still, you know, I'm leaning Baltimore here. And it looks like Deontay Johnson clearly is the receiver to own in Pittsburgh, but you could just as easily see that pendulum shift right back to Claypool if the Ravens evaluate the wide receivers differently. But I'm not starting Claypool here. I'd miss it again.
No.
This seems like a sneaky juju game, just a division rivalry where. Yeah, I think he gets up for these type of games a little bit more. And he did have a decent PPR game last week, so I'm pretty comfortable throwing him back in my starting lineup this week as well. But more a great NFL game. I think it could be another one of these low total games where both teams end up in the 20s when it's all said and done, which just kind of limits fantasy upside. Moving on to the team Pittsburgh beat after Gostkowski was unable to hit, like, what is a 40-some yard field goal. He is just been so erratic, and I think they thought they solved their kicker problems with him. But the 5-1 Tennessee Titans head to Paul Brown Stadium. I mean, that guy just named the stadium after himself. That's way worse than Bill Stadium. You know, that's a step below Bill Stadium naming to the 1-5-1 Cincinnati Barrows.
If I like that, Tennessee 6-point favorite. On the road, Cincinnati with a total of 54.5, so tied for the highest score of the week. The Bengals are looking at 24 points, while the Titans are looking at 30. The Bengals haven't been able to stop the run in about 4 years, and looky, looky, Tennessee likes to pound the ball with Derrick Henry. So Henry should be in line for a monster game here. The only thing to stop him would be injury, I would say, at this point, because the Bengals are horrific, and they're injured up the middle, too. So
It's going to shape up for a big game for him. That should open up the passing game. Tannehill, much to my dismay, apparently is a very good NFL quarterback. So he's putting it together. Wide receiver-wise there, it's hard to trust anybody except A.J. Brown now that he's kind of back and healthy. Corey Davis had a little splash there to start the year, came back from COVID last week. Humphreys got involved when they were really dinged up with injuries, but nothing you want to plug in lineups unless you have to. Cincinnati, on the other hand, Burrow's been firing that thing all over, so give me some more Joe Burrow. The wide receiver seems to be spreading it around. A.J. Green's getting involved a bit more here, but you could play Boyd, you could play Higgins, you could play Green pretty confidently, I think, especially with the high total in this game. I don't know what's Mixon's injury status. Anything new there? When last I checked.
I do know that the Bengals have a bye in week 9.
So, yeah, they're going to rest him. That would be the smart play.
More than likely. They just invested way too much money in that guy. They're still in a rebuild at 1-5-1. So we're going to get another Geo week, which is a startable week. Geo has a running back 2 floor when he is the unquestioned starter.
Correct. Yeah. But, yeah, that kind of the names you know game, of course.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, Cincinnati Bengals run defense is 28th in rushing yards allowed, and they're giving up just under 5 yards per carry. So, and you know who's playing Derrick Henry in 2 of their major dynasty leagues?
Is it you?
This guy. I'm just going to get run over. They're a 200-yard, 2-touchdown game is not far off for Derrick Henry. Hopefully it goes slightly different because I would very much like that. But those same Bengals have only given up 6 rushing touchdowns on the year, less than 1 per game. So
that's double that. Yards,
but they get strict in that red zone and they don't give up those rushing touchdowns. Come on, Bengals. Just sell out against the run and let A.J. Brown just destroy you with Jonnu Smith in the scenes. Yeah, in this game, two good sneaky quarterbacks with upside. You know, Tannehill has just been dealing. But as far as the Cincinnati side, like you said, Barrow is just – chucking it. Like, this dude might set the record for pass attempts in a season. And the Titans are giving up 282 yards per game and have already given up 15 passing touchdowns on the season. So this is another good matchup for Joe Burrow and those wide receivers. And again, like I said, I do think that Joe Mixon misses the game. So you picked up Geo. You got a nice week out of him last week. I think you can get another nice PPR week out of him again this week because no one else is really seeing volume in that Bengals backfield. So yeah, Tennessee should cruise to a victory, but there's a lot of fantasy to be had here.
Yeah, I like the idea of Tennessee getting that huge lead and running it out with Henry and then Cincy trying to play catch up and play from behind. It's a perfect recipe for fantasy success.
Tis. Hopefully a little more Jonnu Smith, please.
Oh yeah.
We all saw that Anthony Firkser stat line after Jonnu left a week earlier. And I'm like, why hasn't Jonnu had that stat line yet? What's going on here? This dude is amazing. He's far superior athlete. Like, let's game plan for him a little bit. Like, maybe this is the week for Jonnu. He did come through the prior game unscathed. And, I just want more Jonnu in my life. So I'm not going to go bowl, but I would not be surprised if Jonnu was a better start than the aforementioned Mark Andrews this week. To give a matchup.
I don't disagree, but they've both burned me quite a bit lately.
It's been rough. It's been rough living in the flames of Mark Andrews and Jonnu Smith. Being one of their major proponents, but still better than the dredge of tight ends that are under them. So could be worse. We are now going to talk about John's backyard, Las Vegas, 3-3 Las Vegas Raiders. Head to First Energy Stadium to do battle with the non-Odell Beckham 5-2 Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, third highest scoring game by my calculations, if I'm not mistaken. Fourth, possibly. Totals 53.5 in most places. Cleveland's a 2.5-point home favorite. They just lost Beckham. They're projected to score 28. While the Raiders are projected to score 25, they've actually always played better without Odell Beckham. Beckham went out last week. Mayfield realized he had to spread the ball around and not force feed him. And they had a pretty good game production, fantasy production last week across the board. So they're going to – it's hard to know where it's going to go, though. I mean, Landry's the number one now. Higgins is the number two. We saw Peoples-Jones get in the end zone. And they're going to play a lot of two tight end sets. And Joku, I believe, got in the end zone last week. Bryant got in twice. And that's, you know, Hooper is a ghost. He hasn't been really used yet after signing that big deal. So they're going to spread it around. I think it's going to be a decent game for Baker. Out of the backfield, obviously, Hunt's the main guy. Glad I wasted all my fab on Dearness Johnson, who has done shit since Chubb went out. So it's the Hunt show. I like all the tight ends. I actually played Njoku in a pinch last week, and that touchdown made that a very worthwhile play. But they're going to spread the ball around. It's hard to trust anyone here. I mean, Landry might see the PPR volume. We kind of saw a lot when he was in Miami going forward. For the Raiders, I don't know, man. Shrug for the Raiders. I like Waller. Carr's not sexy. He'll probably get it done given the points you're expected to score here. Wide receivers, Aguilar seems to be the most consistent guy. Other than that, the Raiders are a bit spookier than I would like, given their total. It's hard to know where it's going to come from.
Yeah, John, I think you'll appreciate this. I was listening to another podcast, and they referenced that someone else had mentioned this. So it's like hearsay at this point. I can't even give credit where credit's due. It said, Nelson Aguilar appears to be the only person that went to Vegas and turned his life around.
Yeah.
He's been great. He's been a revelation. I said it early in the season. I never thought I'd say but I miss Nelson Aguilar because he would sure have been helpful for the Eagles these last couple of weeks. But yeah, to your point, the Harrison Bryant David Njoku duo combined for 6 catches for 76 yards and 3 touchdowns. What's Hooper been doing? He was getting more acclimated into the offense, but he had his appendix out. They said it's likely he doesn't play this week either. So we could probably go back to the well. Harrison Bryant was the starter in the game. So he has already usurped Njoku as far as the pecking order is concerned. And Njoku still quietly wants out of Cleveland. And well, he should, because he just usurped by a rookie after they signed an overpriced tight end for $10 million. So good for him. Keep. Just light that fire every week, Chief David, and send his smoke signals to get the fuck out of Cleveland because you deserve better. But as far as
the snap counts, Bryant 40 snaps and Njoku 31. So
even though they're too tight. So yeah, he's going to be on the field, but still, Bryant was the primary beneficiary. These Las Vegas Raiders have allowed a NFL high 12 rushing touchdowns on the season. So yeah, run right back to Kareem Hunt, fire him up. He had, 21 touches in the game, scored, a receiving touchdown. Feel very comfortable with Kareem Hunt back at home. The Cleveland run defense is allowing 3.8 yards per carry but have given up 9 rushing touchdowns on the season. So they're stingy yards per carry, but they do give up touchdowns. So Josh Jacobs is another temper expectations game. Might not have the yardage you want, but guaranteed, likely touchdown candidate for these Las Vegas Raiders. To your point, without Beckham, it's a hodgepodge. Does Jarvis Landry become the primary? Rashad Higgins was the beneficiary of all the yardage a week ago, and then like you said, Donovan Peoples-Jones got that touchdown. I would like to see him on the field a little bit more. I was pretty high on him, and his epic fall in the draft didn't allow me to land him in a lot of places because it kind of had me out. Like, hey, if the NFL doesn't like him, how can I remain so high on him? But I would like to see him get some more burn in 3 wide receiver sets. But like we just said, the Browns run a lot of 2 tight sets, so it's not going to be heavy snap counts for Donovan Peoples-Jones. Higgins is going to step right into that Beckham role. Now, one thing I do want to discuss is how effective the Browns are at their receivers throwing passes so far this season. I mean, I didn't look at the totals yet, but I'm pretty sure they have 100% completion percentage. They're pushing the ball downfield every time they do it. It never looks pretty. I mean, Jarvis Landry looked like he almost threw his arm out 2 weeks ago when he did it, but shit, it works. Like, almost assume now at this point when one of these wide receivers gets the ball in the backfield, they are not running it. They're going to throw the ball. So let's start keying on that Browns opponents at this point in time. But as far as Vegas is concerned, this is go back to Darren Waller game. I didn't look at the stats from last week, but I know he didn't have a high yardage total in their blowout performance. What did he put on the ledger? 6 for 50 on 9 targets. So not he did score. Huh. I was not watching the game at that point in time, apparently. So
to go back to your wide receivers throwing footballs, Landry's 2 for 2, 56 yards and a touchdown. Beckham was 1 for 1, 18 yards. QB rating for Landry is 158. For Beckham, it's 118.
Damn effective. Damn effective. Utilization of those limited passing attempts. But yeah, Waller had a better game than I thought. You know, he's clearly one of those upper echelon tight ends that you're going to go back to. And I think he'll be a focus of David Carr, Derek Carr. Man, I'll never get that right. A focus of Derek Carr against these Browns. Moving on, we have the LA Rams. And for some reason, I didn't put their standings in here, so I'm just disrespecting the Rams right now. Let me just look real quick and see where they're at on the season. They are 4-2. The 4-2 LA Rams head down to South Beach, Hard Rock Stadium, to welcome Tua Tagovailoa to the NFL with the 3-3 Miami Dolphins.
I am looking forward to seeing Tua. I am not looking forward to seeing Tua face Aaron Donald. New quarterback and you know, it kind of not necessarily overlooked, but I'm not playing any Miami pass catchers. You know, all new team, new chemistry. I know people had mentioned, oh, it's the bye week. Tua's got an extra week. Get ready. I read something somewhere, like with the COVID restrictions and everything, they didn't get like an extra week of practice. They're all like supposed to stay home and stay away from the facility. So he may have, you know, done some shit on Zoom calls and everything, but he didn't get like a whole full week of on field throwing the football to these guys unless they went out to a park somewhere. Because, yeah, I think on the bye week, they're not allowed to even come to the facility. There's some weird, you know, COVID bye week nonsense this year. So I'm staying away from that receiving game. And Tua this week, as much as I'm excited. You could get Gaskin in there because they'll, you know, probably try to run the ball quite a bit to take some of the pressure off Tua. For the Rams, Goff's been just okay. So
you
know, John,
in Miami or in Florida, you're allowed to do whatever you want outside. So,
well, that's true. You, too.
They're allowed to meet as much as they want. They just can't do it at the stadium. Yeah.
Well, we saw that earlier with the – fucking Brady.
Exactly.
Going into people's houses.
Yep.
that's what Tua's got to do. Mm-hmm. It's that Brady magic breaking into people's homes.
Right.
But yeah, the Rams, they spread the ball around too much for my liking. Obviously, you're gonna, if you have them, you play Woods every week. You're going to play Cup every week. Good luck playing Rush Roulette with their tight ends. Goff is in play. And at running back, this is blossomed into a full committee, and somehow Akers is now the odd man out after starting the year pretty decently. So, you know, Brown got in the end zone again. It's a muddled mess. I mean, between injuries and buys, you probably have to squeeze some of these Rams guys in if you have them, but they're all just as likely to get you 3 points as they are to get you something in the mid double digits. 13-3, you're probably 50-50 chance. So I don't trust any of them, even though I think that the Rams will score here, but it's hard to trust anyone. This is a very difficult game.
Yeah. I'm not trusting Cooper Kupp anymore. I know you said you just have to put him in there. I mean, he did one. They don't want to throw it. They want to be a run based offense. Yeah. They don't want Jared Goff doing anything. Half of what Robert Woods does is in the rushing game on these end arounds, you know, and bubble screens. Like, they're not pushing the ball downfield to anyone. They're just using motions to get defenses off balance and like quick hitters with Goff. Like, I'm scared of Kupp. I mean, most teams don't have better options to choose, but I don't believe he's a must start at all. I don't think Robert Woods is a must start. I just think Robert Woods has a better floor than Cooper Kupp. Tyler Higbee was out last week, and our boy Gerald Everett got in the end zone. I would like to see a little bit more Gerald Everett in my life because he is a better fantasy tight end than Tyler Higbee if he were to get the snaps and opportunities that Tyler Higbee had gotten the last year of football, including the tail end of last year when he made a name for himself. I think Gerald Everett would be the person that a lot of people are talking about. But the Rams are pretty shut down. I mean, they just did a number on the overmatched Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football. They're pretty good across the board, pass and run defense. Don't really have a lot of weaknesses. And, you know, to your point, it's welcome to the NFL for Tua with Aaron Donald bearing down on him relentlessly all game. So let's just hope the Tua gets out of his game unscathed. But I'm limiting expectations even on their side of the house too, because you don't know who he's going to favor. Is it going to be Devontae Parker? Is it going to be Preston Williams? Is your boy, the fuck is his name? Who's the guy you like?
Well, I wonder too. I wonder if they're going to
practice squad, like,
or correct
team. Like, could they have a affinity for each other? You know, is it going to be great. Adam Shaheen over Gesicki for similar reasons? I mean, this is, you kind of have to wait and see approach with these Dolphins a little bit, but I don't think Tua is going to win his first NFL start.
I agree. So do the lines makers.
Sounds like it. I do agree with the switch though. I mean, I don't like how they went about it because they kind of like pulled the rug out from under Fitzpatrick, but it's not like he's been playing lights out. Like he's had as many bad games as good games, and you can't not play Tua this year. You have to see what you have in Tua.
Yeah, and they had to move their bye around because I think they were supposed to have the bye week 11, and that was kind of the plan going into it, and they got bumped up because of the games that got shuffled. So is what it is. What can you do?
Yeah, I want Tua. Tua's the future. Ryan Fitzpatrick is just too fun. You know, like,
yeah,
trade him somewhere else. Let him be the starter. Like, let's get him. But they're not going to because he's just such a good, you know, sounding board for Tua. But I would like to see a few more Ryan Fitzpatrick starts in my lifetime. Moving on to the last 1 o'clock game. So sounds like we got a couple fours for you, John. Three. So you're screwed again. Indianapolis Colts, 4-2. Indianapolis Colts head to Ford Field. I like the sound of that. To face off against the 3-3 Detroit Lions.
Only nice thing in Detroit. Yeah, Colts are a 3-point road favorite, total of 50. So decent points to be had here. Colts are looking at 26 points. The Lions are looking at 23 points. Colts just came off the bye, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't.
The week before, Phil Rivers slinging it all over the yard, going throwback Philip Rivers for 1 week.
Yeah, and he could do it again against Detroit. I don't. I'm just going to keep Martin Gale's system here with the Lions and keep betting against them every week. They won two road games in a row. Unbelievable turn of events. Now they come home in a game there. It's small home dog. Colts have looked good. They're coming off the bye. Should be well rested. I see a lot of Taylor in this one. And as good as Rivers looked the last time we saw him, we know he is prone to firing a bunch of dog shit interceptions. So I don't necessarily trust him. This pass game, I don't really trust the receivers. I mean, T.Y. has been completely non-existent this year. Pascal's involved. They've passed it around to the tight ends quite a bit, depending on who the starter is. Mo Alie-Cox had a couple splash plays. Now Trey Burton seems to be emerging. So I don't trust any of the receivers on that side of the ball. I do like the running game, though, and the guys involved there. And if Detroit is able to pull off three in a row here and they're trailing, we could see a little more Nyheim Hines than we've seen in the last couple weeks. For Detroit, I like Stafford. I like Kenny Golladay. Hockenson has been able to get in the end zone a couple of times this year and has looked pretty decent. Other than that, I don't trust this running back by committee, although Swift has slowly been emerging. I don't trust Patricia to go, oh, yeah, this guy's good. Let's get him the ball. So, you know, in a very Burkean move, I could see this end up being a fucking out of nowhere. Kerryon Johnson leads the team in touches and makes everybody sick. You know, kind of like we've been saying, injuries, bye weeks. You could play all three, probably. You could play Swift and AP and Kerryon and hold your nose and hope that's the guy who gets in the end zone.
Don't do that to yourself because Kerryon Johnson's still getting snaps, but he got zero touches in this game.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. The running back touches were almost split. Swift had 9, AP had 11, but Swift was doing all the pass game work. And 4 for 21 is with 5 targets is what you want to see. And Swift, they get in the end zone. So since the bye, they've made a concerted effort these last 2 weeks to integrate Swift. And I'm sure shit hoping that the Colts do the same with Jonathan Taylor. Because not that he hasn't gotten touches, but he just hasn't been the focal point of the offense. And I had to think that's why they drafted him. So fix your running game, which hasn't been as stout. Their run blocking hasn't been dominating. I haven't seen a single Quentin Nelson GIF on Twitter just destroying a human being and changing the course of their life yet this year. So let's get back to it. You know, Colts, be a run-based offense. But speaking with the Colts defense, they're only allowing 3.5 yards per carry this year, 4 rushing touchdowns on the season. So limit expectations on your Detroit running backs. Their pass defense is only allowed 213 yards per game. So the Colts have been sneaky, restrictive. They have faced a lesser caliber of competition. This isn't DVOA. This is just pure stats. But I think Matt Stafford will move the ball on them. And with Swift as the passing downs back, he obviously has far more upside than AP or the aforementioned Kerryon Johnson. You're clearly starting Galladay and Hockenson, but I wouldn't really be going any deeper than that, even though Marvin Jones has had his best week of the season. I think he is a dart throw at best, and you should not expect anything of significance from him. The Lions on the other side are just middle of the pack on both sides of the ball at this point in time. So the Colts should be able to do what they want and establish the run. It has been Trey Burton the last few weeks before the bye, so I have to think that continues, where he is the dominant slot pass catcher for them. And like you said, you know, Pascal on the outside, T.Y. Hilton, good luck. I have no faith that T.Y. Hilton is going to do anything of significance for you, even though I think he did have a touchdown call back their last game before the bye, but they still don't count. So his stat lines have still been dog shit this year. So I'll miss the first T.Y. Hilton game, and I'll probably even be willing to miss the second T.Y. Hilton game being considered. So Matt Stafford, far greater than signed Phil Rivers in this one. The only one I have tremendous confidence in is Jonathan Taylor in this game for doing confidence ratings. We're into 4 o'clock, John. Yes.
Yay.
The 2-4 Justin Herbert-led LA Chargers head to the also 2-4 Drew Lock, who I do sneaky like as well. I just like him. Yeah. He's engaging. Led Denver Broncos at Empower Field at Mile High. I can never say that enough. That is a tremendous name for a stadium. It just commands respect. Tell me about this game.
Yeah, Chargers are a 3-point road favorite at Denver, which is pretty unusual. I think a big part of this is Denver just getting their dicks kicked in last week. And people,
Kicking dicks. Yep.
Yes, sir. I think a lot of it's an overreaction. Chargers are looking at 23. Denver's looking at 20. God, can I please get Austin Eckler back? But that's just a personal thing.
John, the muscle was ripped off the bone. I mean, that's something you usually hear with people eating wings.
Didn't need surgery, though.
It's because he's not playing again this year.
Breaking my heart here.
Something on the road doesn't need surgery. I don't know how those two statements correlate. Yeah, go ahead.
Totals 44. A quick glance. It might be the second lowest scoring game. Yeah, besides that trash New England Buffalo game. So I don't expect much here. I'm pretty sure Denver's in the middle of a cold snap. I think it was 10 degrees yesterday. It was pretty fucking freezing last week when they played a little bit of snow on the field. So I anticipate this going even under that. I think they're going to both try to run quite a bit. I think they're both not going to be very successful at it. I don't love either passing game here for fantasy. I mean, Keenan Allen's obviously going to get peppered with targets, so he's in play. I do like Herbert. I do like Luck, much like you said. I don't know if I like either one of them this week. Tim Patrick's kind of banged up for Denver, so it's hard to say if Judy's going to be the number one, if Patrick can't go this week. This is just a bad matchup in a bad location with what the teams like to do and are going to try to do here. I'm out.
Yeah, these teams are strikingly similar. Their run defenses are comparable both from a yards and TDs allowed perspective. Yards receiving are surprisingly similar as well. The only variance is that the Chargers have given up a significant amount more of passing touchdowns on the season, but you know, Denver just faced off against the Cam Newton, no pass catchers, the Patriots and some other teams that kind of limit those type of statistics. Weather would play a huge factor. I hadn't looked into that, but you got to think Denver at this point in the year, that plays. You're not only Mile High, but now you're starting to get in the snow and cold weather, so that should temper expectations. But I cannot temper expectations on Justin Herbert. This man is fucking amazing.
I like him.
He, oh, goodness gracious. Just
I was too scared though. I couldn't pull the trigger any leagues. And now that I've seen him play, I'm like, ah, would have been nice to get a couple of shares of this.
I got him in Infinity Wars and I was just going heavy quarterback. Just he was the one left because Tua and Barrow had went and I gladly took him. Not that I was exceedingly high on him. He was my third ranked quarterback in the group as well, but it's been nice thus far owning him and he does not shy away from anything. Unfortunately, Mike Williams has turned into Jalen Guyton and Hunter Henry has turned into a hodgepodge of Virgil Green and Donald Parham. So this dude is spreading the pill around. You don't usually see that from, well, other than Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen gets his like 40% target share. Everyone else has to share the pie. So Keenan Allen's the only guy you can trust in his passing game. It should have been Hunter Henry week last week and it wasn't. Parham got the touchdown. Virgil Green was soaking up yards. He's a low-end tight end one. Unfortunately, he should be a high-end tight end one, but he just hasn't gotten the end zone yet this year. He's just everyone but him is seeing end zone opportunities. Mike Williams almost posted a goose egg in a decent spot last week while Guyton got the bomb touchdown. With the weather, I'd temper expectations. Neither of those running backs did shit. Justin Jackson and Joshua Kelly both just not even startable a week ago, and I wouldn't feel comfortable with them this week. Phillip Lindsay appears to be out, so this is going to be a full Melvin Gordon show again.
What happened to him?
I will have to look it up. I just know that he is out.
Son of a bitch.
I will.
I got him for, what, 2 weeks, and then he disappeared again?
Yeah, let me look in this play.
Unacceptable.
Do a quick search of Phillip. I always spell his name wrong, Lindsay. Isn't it S-A-Y? No, I always want to put S-E-Y. Is it E-Y?
I could be wrong.
probably I can never find him. Okay, they did not want to give me any update on him on said app that will remain nameless. So we'll just go to Twitter real quick and do this beautiful podcasting excellence thing so I can verify my information. But I did read, let's see, Philip Lindsay. It's S-A-Y. Phil Lindsay's now heading to the locker room in a game out with a concussion. So, yeah, he ain't playing. Oh. So maybe a little Royce Freeman, but you're going to get a lot of Melvin Gordon in this game and his revenge game against the Chargers. So what that means is he's going to get 20 touches. He's going to be an RB2 for you, like it or not. But temper expectations. Keenan Allen is the only must start. And in that Denver passing game, you mentioned it. If Tim Patrick's dinged up, Jerry Jeudy really hasn't exploded yet like some of these other young receivers have. KJ Hamler is a DFS dart throw in this type of environment. Looks like Albert O is the apple of Drew Lock's eye, his buddy from Mizzou. So, yeah, temper expectations on Noah Fant as well.
Forgot to play together.
Yeah, pay attention to the weather in Denver. Next 4 o'clock game, the 4-2 New Orleans Saints. We should call them the New Orleans Slants. Sounds better. Another shot fired at Michael Thomas. Head to Soldier Field to do battle with the don't deserve to be 5-2 Chicago Bears.
No, sir. Saints a 4-point road favorite, total of 45. Bears are looking at 20 points. Saints are looking at 24. Pretty easy math on that one. You know, what are you going to do with New Orleans? It's all Alvin Kamara. The wide receivers all depends on if Thomas is playing or not. We haven't seen him, what, since week one?
Barely saw him in week one.
Between injuries and suspensions. If he's playing, you're going to play him. If he's not, it looks like the undrafted kid whose name totally just fell out of my brain.
Yes, Callaway.
There you go. He seems to be the first guy in the pecking order with Manny Sanders out with that Rona. So very narrow route distribution tree. I don't like any of them, to be honest. So play Callaway if Thomas is out. Even if Thomas is in, Callaway is going to be the number two, and obviously the Bears are going to roll coverage to Thomas. Callaway could have another decent game here. For the Bears, no thank you. Allen Robinson got a little last week, said he had a concussion too, so there's a chance he misses this one. You know, Anthony Miller's just breaking my heart, doing nothing. This team, the Bears, focus a lot on their tight ends. Kmet, I think, got in the end zone again, but Kmet and the ghost of Jimmy Graham are in play here. So it's ugly, ugly game. Not interested.
Yes, ugly game. Komet got the junk time touchdown. I turned it off at 24-3, so wasn't even aware of who actually got that. No, Komet did not score yet. 2 for 45. Well, no one scored, apparently. No, must be defensive because they didn't throw one, they didn't run one.
Yep, 2 for 45. You're right.
We'll go for the old game tracker. What happened here? Oh, Woods fumbled, and it was returned for a touchdown by Eddie Jackson, 8 yards. So no offensive touchdowns from the Bears. They got lucky to get a defensive one at the end of the game. But I'm with you. I mean, you can't run on the Saints. They have been locked down. So I said, good luck, Bears, because that's what you would prefer to do. Haven't been very successful at it and have to abandon it pretty early on. But what the Saints do give up is passing touchdowns. They've given up 17 passing touchdowns on the young season. So some reason for optimism with Allen Robinson, my boy, target leader for those Bears on Monday Night Football. Darnell Mooney saw 7 targets. There were 2 plays where he roasted the cornerback. And whether you want to blame him or Foles or pressure or whatever, they just missed where Mooney could add a full Mooney game, John. It is going to fucking come.
Sure.
I keep saying it till it comes. But he did still put 3 for 40 out there. So contributing with his targets. But, yeah, I want nothing to do with Chicago. None of them. Not at all. Not interested. I don't want David Montgomery's empty 14 carries. He's just piling on these Leonard Fournette-ish targets, 5 catches for 21 yards, like just compiling his way to relevancy in PPR leagues, but he's just doesn't deserve it. Like, get someone better in there. I would actually like to see what Lamar Miller can do with this offense, because even old Lamar Miller, I think, would be better than David Montgomery in this offense. But the Saints, you nailed it. I mean, it's Kamara, it's Breeze, it's Mike Thomas. If he comes back, you start him. Jared Cook seems to thrive when Thomas is out. And with him and Sanders out, I mean, Jared Cook falls into that must-start territory. But, yeah, other than that, just not a lot of unknowns here. So we'll move on to the last of the 4 o'clock games, and it is a division battle. Should be an interesting game. The 4-3 San Francisco 49ers head to CenturyLink Field to do battle with your boys. The 5-1 just took an L on Sunday Night Football because they don't do things the right way. Seattle Seahawks.
We got to bang these last couple out. I got to run.
I'm with you.
Rolling. Yeah, Seattle's given up a ton of points to the opposing wide receivers. Debo looks like he's going to miss some time again. Came back and he's out. Jeff Wilson looks like he's going to be out for quite a while too. So the guys that we wanted to see something from are not going to be in this game. So for the passing game, I guess Ayuk, could we see some Trent Taylor, my man Kendrick Bourne? The opportunity will be there for those kind of sleepery guys this week. For Seattle, you're going to fire up the guys you know, Russ, DK, and Lockett coming off that monster game. Carson got hurt. I think he's going to be out again this week, so it's probably going to be a lot of Carlos Hyde. They have been working in Travis Homer, and hopefully DJ Dallas got in the game a little bit late, was doing mostly some pass game work. He did miss a fucking egregious block at one point, but that was he was probably the best pass blocking rookie running back coming in out of this group. So I think we'll see a little more of him this week too, which thank God I'm in a terrible spot where I actually have to start him again this week. So I need it. Should be a ton of points. Total's 54 in the game. Seattle is looking at a total of 28 while the Niners are looking at 25. So should be a close one, should be a shootout. And I'm looking forward to it. Every Seattle game's been pretty damn good this year for fantasy.
It has. And I was very wrong. On last week's podcast, I called for a defensive battle, like one of these like grinded out games. It was anything but, with 71 points scored. And, you know, they just let Arizona come back into this game, unfortunately. 3 interceptions by Russell Wilson is very unexpected. But, you know, I didn't even think you referenced Tyler Lockett's 15 for 203 because they put Patrick Peterson on DK Metcalf. So rather just let Tyler Lockett beat the shit out of them the entire game. Yeah, why not adjust at a certain point? Like, okay, well, maybe we should put Patrick Peterson on Tyler Lockett. No, let's just keep him on DK Metcalf and let Tyler Lockett eat all game long.
When they took him off Metcalf, that's when they went to Metcalf.
Yeah, I mean, which didn't happen very often as a Metcalf owner. 5 targets, 2 catches, 23 yards. Better days are ahead for him. the San Francisco pass defense isn't as locked down. They're all banged up. So I'm with you. You mentioned the injuries to the running backs on Seattle. So, you know, could be a Homer DJ Dallas split because Hyde left that, got injured as well. There's no way. I don't think Carson plays with a midfoot sprain. That sounds like something a running back needs a little rest from. So there'll be a lot of passes to be had here on the San Fran side of the house. Yeah, IU could set up for another massive game with Debo out. Should be Kittle, but you know, there's good linebackers in Seattle. If they get Jamal Adams back, you know, they should limit him a little bit, but he's got to be the focus of the passing game. And now their running game is down to Jerick McKinnon and Jamichael Hasty. So maybe they unmothball Jerick McKinnon again. Shanahan came out and said they used him far more than they intended to early in the year, which is why they've limited him the last couple of weeks. Well, I don't think they have that luxury now, because they won't have Raheem Mostert. They won't have Jeff Wilson. I don't know that they'll have Tevin Coleman. So they're going to have to use Jerick McKinnon in this game. So I do think he's flexible. I also think Jamichael Hasty is flexible in this spot. But I'm with you. It should be a good division game. I'm not calling the unders ever again in a Seattle Seahawks game. So we are going to go with the overs because they score. So pretty obvious game. Now we're going to move to what should, again, be a very quick game for us. And it's Sunday Night Football. I think if they could flex out of this, they probably would. But they only leveraged that last week because of the coronavirus and moving the Raiders. But the 2-5 Ben DiNucci-led Dallas Cowboys head to Lincoln Financial Field to do battle with the division-leading 2-4-1 Philadelphia Eagles.
Total of 43 might be too high with Eagles. The line opened at 3. Some places it's 3.5, and DraftKings has it at 7.5. Eagles have more than a touchdown for DraftKings. You mentioned old Ben DiNucci, and on NFL.com, Dallas Cowboys might start third stringer Ben DiNucci with Andy Dalton currently in the concussion protocol. They're unlikely to sign another quarterback. Dallas has Garrett Gilbert on the roster, but they can't add somebody because of the – they can't add someone, but they can't get on the field because of the Rona rules. So downgrade all your Dallas pass catchers. I didn't see much of DiNucci in the game last week, so I don't even know how he looked. But what was he, a seventh rounder? So – temper expectations. It should be Zeke heavy. We might even see a decent bit of Pollard if they just want to try to run the ball and keep DiNucci from fucking it up for him. For Philly, you mentioned it earlier, Wentz should have a decent game here. Is our guy Rager coming back this week, Walker?
He was activated and the cast is off. He's already catching passes. There is some optimism that Jalen Rager will see the field on Sunday Night Football. Which
fire that boy up if he's out there.
We need. Yeah.
Yeah.
Calling all reinforcements.
I like Rager. I like Wentz. Fulgham is suddenly the NFL's target hog, so he can play too. This Dallas secondary is trash, so Wentz could fire this ball all over to Fulgham, and Rager could be a sneaky good game for Philly. Dallas is going to get destroyed here.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas looked abysmal and just giving it up to the Washington football team the week prior, and now they're trying out Ben DiNucci to try and right the ship. Eagles are stout against the run, too, so temper expectations on another Zeke week. He loses. He lost his whole offensive line. He lost Dak. He loses all his upside.
Even if they weren't good at it, what are you going to do if you're Philly? You're going to let Ben DiNucci beat you or Zeke?
Selling out on the run, you know, so you better hope that Zeke finds his way into a ton of targets, which I don't know that Ben DiNucci is going to be doing that, although he might be scared for his life and checking down more after a week. But, yeah, the Eagles should win this game handily. Hopefully we get Rager back. Three wide set, Rager, Greg Ward, and the aforementioned Fulgham is a little appealing. John Hightower is good for a couple deep balls. We are very much injured at the tight end, so Richard Rodgers and potentially Akeem Butler. He got an end zone target a week ago, wasn't able to convert it, but might see a sneaky Akeem Butler. They're not going to play Miles Sanders this week, so we get one more week of Boston Scott, which is very startable in this week. Easily startable because the Eagles also have a bye week 9, so they're not going to rush Miles Sanders back, just like the Bengals didn't. We shouldn't rush Joe Mixon back. So fire up Boston Scott. I think Wentz has a top 5 fantasy week again. He's going to put 300 and 2-3 touchdowns. Going to run it a little bit as well. And good luck picking what Dallas receiver you want to start with Ben DiNucci, because there was nothing of goodness even with Andy Dalton in that game earlier. So they have hit their floor, and you know, lower expectations on CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper and Dalton Schultz as well. You can't start Michael Gallup to save your life. So Eagles by murder.
Yep.
Dallas sucks, Burke. Moving on. Monday night, we'll wrap this up and get out of here. It is the all-star Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 5-2. Antonio Brown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, head to MetLife Stadium. Ooh, be a little bit afraid, Bucks. It's MetLife Stadium to beat the dog shit, kick the dicks in, bend over these 1-6 New York Giants.
Yeah, injuries are kind of the story here for Tampa again. What's his name? Your man Godwin broke his finger. He had surgery. He's out. I think didn't Scotty Miller get hurt too? So they're a little banged up.
You're right. Taking Scotty Miller's lunch anyway.
Yeah, Evans still isn't healthy, but total of 40. Open at 48, down to 46. Tampa's a 10.5 point favorite. Probably not enough, to be honest. Tampa's looking at a score of 28, while the garbage Giants are the second lowest on the board behind those terrible city mate Jets, looking at 17 points. No thank you to much on the Giants side. Tampa's great against the run. Not that you want to play Devontae Freeman or Wayne Gallman. They might be trailing. I don't mind the wide receivers getting some garbage time points here. Not might be trailing. They will be trailing. So I like the garbage time upside from the Giants receivers. On the flip side, Tampa, oh, it's hard to trust this backfield. Fournette came back and got a lot more work than most people thought. They could jump out to a big lead here and could be just a Fournette and Keyshawn Vaughn murder them in the second half to milk the clock game. So it's going to be hard to trust anybody here. I mean, Evans is on the field. He's going to be the healthiest guy they have. So you have to like him. But other than that, despite this spread, Tommy Brady's going to have a good game, but it's hard to really trust anybody to be the guy. I think a lot of guys will have enough points to plug in your lineup and be happy with it, but I don't think anybody really explodes here because they have enough options. And I think they get to a huge lead and start filtering other guys onto the field.
Yeah, no argument. I'm glad you brought up Leonard Fournette. I knew you would, because we burned that candle. It's not going out. He looked way better than Ronald Jones yet again. Ronald Jones just happened to get the rushing touchdown. But even in the passing game, 6 for 47 from Leonard Fournette. I mean, we all know Ronald Jones can't even catch a cold. So he doesn't have to worry about getting a Rona. He's immune. That dude can't catch anything. So his 1 for 2 receiving, like. Fournette, stay healthy, stay in the good graces of these Buccaneers, because you easily have RB2 appeal week in and week out, even without a Ronald Jones injury, because you're clearly their passing downs back. You're getting you got half their carries in this blowout game. Like, please, Leonard, just stay healthy and keep your mouth shut so that we can get some Leonard Fournette goodness. But I did just see on Twitter, Leonard Fournette tweeted out, "Damn, I need me some touchdowns." We agree. He's going to get him here. They're going to get a Leonard Fournette touchdown dance guarantee out of me in this one, because they are going to destroy him. Leonard Fournette is going to see carries down the stretch. Now, the Giants are actually pretty good against the run. They give it up against the pass. They've only given up 3.7 yards per carry as a run defense. So not where you want to attack these Giants. You want to attack them over the top like Brady did those Raiders a week ago, throwing for 4 touchdowns. So even without Godwin, who unfortunately did fracture his ring finger and will be out multiple weeks, like, he's snake bit this year. Like, just can't – his whole body's just betraying him and betraying me at the same time, because I literally have Chris Godwin everywhere, and it hurts. Every time I get a little comfortable with my starting lineup, Chris Godwin gets a boo-boo and an ouchie, and I have to miss him for a couple more weeks. So, yeah, let's see. Antonio Brown's going to get right off the bus, and he's going to get 10 targets in this game. He's probably going to catch 6 or 7 of them. It's probably going to be for 80 yards and a touchdown as well. Like, nothing ever happened. And you're going to fire up Gronk as well. Brady is a must start on the Giants side. No one I'm comfortable with. at all. Nope. I think Dante Freeman practiced again, so it's back to being a who gives a shit, even though Wayne Gallman looked better than him a week ago, so you can't start any running backs. You wouldn't start against Tampa Bay anyway. Slayton got injured too, so check his status. Ingram dropped an easy bunny pass from Danny Dimes that would have been a huge gain and would have iced away the win for those Giants against my Eagles a week prior, and so I don't trust Evan Ingram anymore either. So trust no Giant, and start just about every Tampa Bay Buccaneer. Did I miss anything?
No, sir. That wraps up week 8.
It does. Give us one bold prediction, and let's get out of here.
Oh, I wasn't even ready for that.
Okay, I will die.
Oh, here, I got one. Chiefs. Chiefs win by 35 points.
35. I don't think
that's even, is that bold even?
Listen, it's a cover. It's a heavy cover. So, yeah, I mean, it's I think it's bold enough. You know, they win by 5 touchdowns. Yeah, I don't think you should be saying that very often. So it will qualify as bold. I'm going to try and go a little bold here and just going to play off the bye week strategy. And it's that these Baltimore Ravens finally commit to J.K. Dobbins more. And he leads the Baltimore backfield. He puts up 80 all-purpose and a touchdown in a must-win division game against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Nice.
All right, take us out of here, John. Let's get back to life.
Wraps it up for myself, John DeBarry, for my co-host, Matt Walker, for the Missing in Action, Andrew Burke. We are the Fantasy 40, and we are out.
Out!
Got to fake an injury and get in the pre-board and sit in that first row at the – well, if you fly Southwest, you could pick your seat. That was the lifesaver, sitting in the fucking bulkhead seat, having that extra room in front so your kid can actually kind of run around a little bit in that aisle.
Yeah, look, you got life hacks, man.
Yeah, I used to borrow a friend of mine broke his foot, and I used to wear his fucking foot cast thing to the airport and be like, I need to pre-board with my shoe and my suitcase. Then I land, and the first thing I do is switch it out.
You just come out, just walk it off.
Yep.
Pardon me, excuse me. Don't mind me. I'm just getting off the plane first, suckers.
Yeah, first one on, first one off, row one. Yeah, they all watch me change my shoe as soon as I get off the fucking skipping jetway. Yeah, nice. Jogging to the bathroom. Yeah.
There should be a video of that. Oh, I gotta piss. Let me get out of here.
Oh, fuck. There's a life hack to tag on to the end of the episode. I like it. The irony is now I fucking need it. Now we actually have to pre-board every fucking time. The karma has bit me in the ass.
Life has come full circle.